Jim Carnicelli's AI Blog, Thursday, April 12, 2007. Pattern Sniffer, a Demonstration of Neural Learning. Introduction. For over a year, I've been nursing what I believe is a somewhat novel concept in AI that superficially resembles a neural network and is inspired by my read of Jeff Hawkins' On Intelligence. Recently, I finally got around to writing code to explore it. I was deeply surprised by how well it already works that I thought it worthwhile to write a blog entry introducing the concept and making public my source code and test program for independent review. For lack of putting any real thought into it, I just named the project/program Pattern Sniffer. My regular readers will recognize my frequent disdain for traditional artificial neural networks, ANNs. Not only because they do not strike me as being anything like the ones in real brains, but also because they seem to fail miserably at displaying anything like intelligent behavior. So it is with reluctance that I call this a neural network. The test program I made, however, has only one layer of neurons, which I call a neuron bank. I did not wish yet to demonstrate a hierarchy and multi-level abstraction, though. My main goal was to focus specifically on a very narrow but almost completely overlooked topic in artificial intelligence, unguided learning. Unguided learning. All artificial neural networks I have ever seen or read about rely on a so-called training phase, where they are exposed to examples of certain patterns they are supposed to be able to recognize in the future before they are ever put out into the real world. I was disappointed when I finally read of how Numenta's hierarchic temporal memories, HTMs, undergo the same sort of learning process before they can begin recognizing things in the world. This smacks in the face of how humans and other mammals, and indeed, all creatures on Earth that can learn, work. Does intelligence require that an intelligent being continue to learn once it enters a productive life? I think the answer is obviously yes. What's more, it's tempting for us to think humans rarely go through learning, as in their school years, and spend most of their lives in a basic production mode. Yet I would argue that every moment we are awake, we are learning things. Most of it is quickly forgotten. We use the terms short-term memory and working memory to identify this, which seems to suggest we have something like computer RAM, while the real long-term memory is packed away into a hard drive. I'm no expert in neurobiology, so I may be missing some important information, but the idea of information being transferred in packages of data from one part of the brain to another for long-term storage doesn't seem to jibe with my limited understanding of how our brains work. Why, for example, should learning a phone number long enough to dial it occur in one part of the brain while learning it for a long-term use, like with our own home numbers? And how would it be transferred? What if it's the same part of the brain learning that phone number, whether for short or long-term usage? Perhaps the part of my brain that is most directly associated with remembering phone numbers has some neurons that have learned some important phone numbers and will remember them for life, while it contains other neurons that have not learned any phone numbers and are just eagerly awaiting exposure to new ones that may be learned for a few seconds, a few minutes, or a few years. Finite resources. We are constantly learning, yet we have a finite amount of brain matter. Somehow, we must have some mechanism for deciding what information we are exposed to is important enough to retain long term, and which is only worth retaining for a moment. When I studied how Numenta's HTMs learn, I was a bit disappointed to see that while there is a finite and predetermined number of nodes in an HTM, the amount of memory required for one is variable. This is like many other kinds of classifier systems and other learning algorithms. This does make some sense from an engineering perspective, but it does not seem to fit what I understand of how our brains work. Our neurons may change the number and arrangement of dendritic connections, but it's a far cry from keeping a long list of learned things inside. So far, it seems ANNs are one of the only class of learning systems out there that do use a finite and predefined amount of memory in learning and functioning. I believe that, for some functional chunk of cortical tissue, there is a fixed number and basic arrangement of neurons, and they all are doing basically the same thing, like learning, recognizing, and reciting phone numbers. It seems intuitive to believe that that chunk has its own way of deciding how to allocate its neurons to various numbers, with some being locked down long-term, and others being open to learning new ones immediately for short-term use. Any one of these may also eventually become locked down for the long-term, too. I also believe it's possible, though not certain, that some neurons have learned information for the long-term may occasionally have that information decay and be freed up to learn new things. Competing to be useful. When I started thinking about banks of neurons working in this way, I naturally asked the question, how does the brain decide what is important to learn and how long to retain it? It then occurred to me that there may be some kind of competition going on. What if most of the neurons in the cortex want more than anything to be useful? What if they are all competing to be the most useful neuron in the entire brain? Let's start with the assumption that all neurons in a neuron bank all have access to the same input data. And let's say each neuron wishes to be most useful by learning some important piece of information. You would think that the first problem to arise would be that they would all learn the exact same piece of information and thus be redundant. But what if, when one neuron learns a piece of information, the others could be steered away from learning the same information? What if every neuron was hungry to learn, but also eager to be unique among its peers in what it knows? But how could one neuron know what its peers know? Would that require an outside arbiter? An executive function, perhaps? Not necessarily. It's possible that each neuron, when it considers the current state of input, decides how closely that input matches its own expected pattern that it has learned, shouts out how strongly it considers the input to match its expectation. The other neurons in the bank could each be watching to see which neuron shouts out the loudest and assume that neuron is the most likely match. Actually, it could be enough to know the loudest shout and not which neuron did the shouting. Confidence. The idea that every neuron in a bank reports to the group how well it thinks it matches the input is powerful. It follows, then, that the neuron that shouts the loudest would pat itself on the back by becoming more confident in its knowledge and thus reinforce what it knows. Conversely, all the other neurons would become no more confident and perhaps even less so with each passing moment that they go unused. Confidence breeds stasis. In this case, that's ideal. What if some neurons in a bank were highly confident in what they know, and others were very unconfident? Those that have low confidence should be busy looking for patterns to learn. In a rich environment, there will be a nearly limitless variety of new patterns that such neurons could learn. There are several ways a brain could decide that some piece of information is important. One is simple repetition. When you want to remember someone's name, you probably repeat it in your mind several times to help reinforce it. And in school, repetition is the key to learning, so it could be that individual neurons of low confidence gain confidence when they latch on to some new pattern and see it repeated. Repetition suggests non-randomness, and hence a natural sort of significance. What if, as a neuron becomes more confident, it becomes less likely to change its expectation of what pattern it will match? What if confidence is itself a moderator of a neuron's flexibility to learning new patterns? The simulation. Armed with this hypothesis, I set out to make a program called Pattern Sniffer to simulate a bank of neurons operating in this way and to test its viability. My goal, to be sure, is not to replicate human neocortical tissue. I suspect our brains do some of what my hypothesis entails, but my main goal is to see if learning can happen like this. Here's a screenshot from the program. The screenshot is captioned, "Screenshot from Pattern Sniffer Program." Most of them have that same exact caption, not very original. I'll briefly summarize what you can see. You look and there are Along the top of this very wide screenshot are a bunch of little variables that the user can tweak. There's a little 5x5 grid that's all white pixels, just very blown up, very large grid, the 25 pixel input array. There are buttons and checkboxes labeled random patch, keep going. There's a noise level from 0 to 100. There's a linger button, a pattern number, a use first number of 25. There are 25 input patterns. I'll explain all this as we go on. And there's finally a brainwash button. Below that are two rows of neurons, all in what's referred to as a bank, and you, these are visible displays of the state of each neuron, and there are 26 of them in this particular bank. Each neuron is a grayish box, is represented by a grayish box labeled at the top as neuron 1, neuron 2, and so on. Below that is a 25 pixel grid, you know, a 5x5 grid. Just as before, each of these neurons in this naive state at the start of the program has just random grayscale from black to white in each of these boxes. And below that, there are two other little boxes that are labeled as match and confidence. And they're in the naive state, they all begin with white as the match and white as the confidence. As I'll explain later on, white is numerically negative 1 and black is numerically positive 1, the highest value. Okay. You can download the Pattern Sniffer program and its source code. This is visualbasic.net 2005 application. Once you unzip it, you will find the executable program at, and there's a path that's not worth repeating here. There is a patternsniffer.exe.config file alongside it, which you can edit with the text editor to change certain settings, such as the number of neurons in the bank. There is also a snapshot subfolder, in case you wish to use the snapshot feature, not shown here. The program's user interface is very simply as seen above. The main feature is a set of gray boxes representing individual neurons in a single bank. The grid of various shades of gray boxes in each represents the dendrites of each. Input values in this program are from negative 1 to positive 1. In this UI, negative 1 is represented as white and positive 1 as black. Each dendrite has an expectation of what its input value should be for it to consider itself to match. In this example, there are 25 input values, hence 25 dendrites per neuron. The top left corner of the program features an input grid, also with 25 values. The user can click on this to alternate each pixel from black to white. You probably won't want to use that, though, as the program comes with a sourcepatterns.bmp file that has 25 5x5 grayscale images on it, which you can edit. Following is a magnified version of sourcepatterns.bmp, and the figure is labeled as sourcepatterns.bmp, magnified 10 times. And what you see in this image is a grid. It happens by coincidence also to be a 5x5 grid. Each of the little patterns in it is a 5x5, just like the input in the dendrites grid. And there are simply red lines dividing each. Moving on. When you start the program, the neurons start out in a naive state. They know nothing and hence have nearly zero confidence, shown as a white box in each neuron and display above. As you click the random patch button, the program picks one of the patterns in sourcepatterns.bmp, displays a representation of it in the grid, presents it to the neuron bank for a moment of consideration, and updates the display to reflect changes in the neuron bank's state. Check the Keep Going checkbox to make pushing this button happen automatically. To be clear, while the program displays a two-dimensional grid of image data, the neurons have no awareness of either a grid or of it being graphical data. They only know they take a set of linear values as input. The inputs could be randomly reshuffled at the start with no impact on behavior. The grid and the choice of image data is simply to help us visualize what is going on inside the bank. You can control how many of the patterns in the source set are used by changing the use first number. If you choose 3, for example, patterns 1, 2, and 3 will be used to select randomly from with each click of the random patch button. At any time, you could specifically change the pattern number to select a specific pattern to work with. Clicking linger causes the bank to go through a single moment of pondering the input, just like when the user clicks random patch. With each moment of pondering, the brain becomes more set in what it knows. Clicking brainwash brings the entire neuron bank back to its naive state. The noise setting is a value from 0 to 100% and controls how degraded the input pattern is when presented to the neuron bank. At 100%, one pattern is nearly indistinguishable from another. Learning in linear time. Let's start with a familiar yet simplistic case of training and using our neuron bank. We begin with the naive state as follows. Not surprisingly, this first image looks just like the previous figure before. All of the 26 neurons have minimal match value and minimal confidence. A pattern hasn't been selected yet at random, and we haven't begun training. Pattern 1 contains all white pixels. With the first click of linger, the neurons in the bank all try to determine which of them best matches this pattern. In this case, neuron 14, or N14, is most similar. And the figure that follows shows the neurons have all shifted a little bit, trying to jockey for position. But as mentioned before, neuron 14, which happens to be the leftmost on the second row of neurons here, it's indicated that this is the best match in this case by this gray box actually having a red background now. Bright red, just to catch your eye and say, oh, this is the one that was the best match. Looking across the board, the match boxes on each of these is now kind of a 50% gray, indicating that it's they're all kind of bad matches. There are no strong matches. If they were strong matches, they would have a solid black. If they were just exact opposite matches, they'd be solid white. The confidence levels on each of these is pretty well minimal. And I attempted to use the term zero here, but it's technically negative one. But that's the current state of this next figure that we're looking at here. Because it yells the loudest, it is rewarded by having its confidence level raised ever so slightly and by moving its dendrites' expectation levels closer to the input pattern. The lower the confidence, the more pliable the dendrites' expectations are to change. Since N14 has near zero confidence, that is to say negative one, it conforms nearly 100% in this single step. Clicking linger 7 more times, N14 continues to be the best match and so continues to increase its confidence until it is nearly full confidence, plus one. And the figure below illustrates this. The most notable difference from the previous figure is now the confidence, instead of being white, is now black, indicating positive one, or the highest strength. Now we move to pattern 2 and repeat this. Pattern 2 is all black pixels. N23 happens to be the most like this pattern, so with repetition it learns quickly. And now as we look at the next figure, shows N14 is still solidly white. It's matching that full white picture. Its match level is totally white because it's the exact opposite, whereas almost all the other neurons have a 50% gray, meaning pretty weak match. Neuron N14's confidence level is still in that solid black, still very high confidence in what it knows. So it's not very pliable. All these other neurons have shifted a little bit. Neuron 23, which was minimal confidence, but happened by coincidence to be the best match in this case. However, is shown here with the red background, just to catch your eye and say, here's the one that was the best match. Its dendrites, its 5x5 grid, shows solid black pixels. And its match level is gray like all the others. It's not really a great match to begin with, but its confidence level, after all this, is very high. It's pretty clear that this one, after the seven steps of you know, seeing this same pattern repeated over and over again, is pretty confident that it should have learned this. So, there it is. Notice in the following how N14 is still expecting the white pattern and has a high level of confidence. Its expectations have shifted ever so slightly, indicated by the very faint gray boxes scattered within N14's display. We continue this process for the first six patterns, picking one and lingering on it for eight steps each, and end up with the following state. And the following figure shows the first six patterns have been learned now. Not surprisingly, there are six neurons which now have a high level of confidence. N6, for example, represents what I call the bottom bar, which is to say, in this 5x5 grid, the lower two rows are all solid black, and the upper three rows are all solid white. N9 has learned what I call the left bar. It's the same pattern, just turned, rotated 90 degrees, which is to say, the left two columns of dendrites here in this grid are solid black, and the three right columns are solid white. N14 still learned its solid white pattern, and N16 has still learned its right bar pattern, which is to say, two right columns are black and three left columns are white. N21 has learned the top bar pattern, that is, top two rows are black, lower three rows are white. And N23, as before, has learned its solid black pattern. You can quickly find the learned knowledge by looking for black confidence level boxes. At this point, you may wonder why the left, right, top, or bottom bar patterns would match neurons with randomized expectations better than, say, the solid white or solid black patterns. This has to do with the way matching occurs and is affected by a neuron's confidence level. When a neuron bank is asked to ponder the current input, it goes through two steps, with each neuron being processed in turn in one step before the next step proceeds, and each neuron is again processed. Step one is matching. It begins with each dendrite calculating its own match strength. The match strength is calculated as max signal minus absolute value of input minus expectation, where max signal equals 1. Thus, the closer the scalar input value is to the value expected by that dendrite, the closer the match strength will be to the maximum possible. Things get interesting here. Before returning the match strength value, we alter it. If the strength is less than 0, that is, if the dendrite finds the input value is very different, then we penalize the match strength using strength equals strength times neuron.confidence times 6. The final strength, whether adjusted or not, is divided by 6 to make sure the strength is never outside the min-max range of negative 1 to positive 1. So, the more confident the neuron is in what it knows, the more strongly mismatched inputs will penalize the match value. So now, if I set use first to 6 and check keep going, the program will continually run through these first six patterns that have been learned and will always match and reinforce them. So far, this is not very remarkable, as it is easy to make a program learn any number of distinct digital patterns. As we'll see, however, there's a lot more to this than this cheap parlor trick. What is remarkable, however, is the time it takes to learn AI systems that include learning often suffer exponential increases in learning time as the amount of information to learn increases linearly. In this simple demonstration, it does not matter how many novel patterns are exposed to the neuron bank. It will take the same number of steps of repetition to solidify a naive neuron's knowledge. One simple estimate would be that it takes 8 steps to learn each new pattern when they are all presented in this fashion. There are caveats to be sure. For one, the configuration for this demo has only 26 neurons, which means it can only learn up to 26 distinct patterns. For another, as time passes and a neuron is not used, if it never matches anything, it slowly loses confidence that it is still useful and begins to degrade until it is finally naive again. So there is a practical limit to how many patterns can be taught. Before that, there has to be a refreshment process to bolster the existing neuron's confidences. All at once learning. The story changes when learning is done in bulk. Let's change the experiment a little to illustrate. First, we'll brainwash our neuron bank. Then, we set use first to 6. The same solid black and white patterns, plus the left, right, top and bottom bars that we saw before. Now we'll step through the process for a while using the random patch button. Below is a series of screenshots. Note the steps taken number in each step. The first figure shows the naive state of this neuron bank after we hit the brainwash button. Again, we have the same old randomly assigned shades of gray, or shades between white and black, in each dendrite for each neuron. Confidence level is minimal, that is, it's shown here as white. In step 1, N21, the first pattern that is presented of these 6 selected at random is the solid black, and in fact, N21 is the one that best matches it, and so it temporarily learns it. Now, in the next figure, we've moved to the right bar pattern. N21, which learned the solid black, it's interesting because it still looks more like solid black than any of the other ones. But the fact is, its dendrites have already begun to degrade. You can see there's a lot of gray boxes in among the mostly black. N5, however, let's learn this right bar pattern. In the next figure, this is steps taken equals 3, you see the same thing. N21 has continued to degrade a little bit here. Again, its confidence level is low because it only saw it once. N5, which learned the right bar pattern, has already begun to degrade too. And now we see the lower bar pattern, the bottom bar pattern. N16 has picked this one up. Now, in the next figure, we see the next step has been taken. We have randomly selected the bottom bar pattern again, twice in a row now. The other neurons, as expected, are continuing to decay because of their low confidence. Now, in this next step, steps taken equals 5, the right bar pattern shows up again. And once again, we see that N5 is reinforced, and its confidence level has begun to rise, just like the bottom bar confidence has begun to rise. The next step shows the top bar, and N7 has learned that. The next step again shows the right bar, so that right bar pattern is getting a lot of reinforcing selected at random. The next step, we see the left bar. Now that's at step 8. These figures show steps 1 through 8. When we started out, all neurons were naive, meaning they had not learned any patterns and they had no confidence in what they knew. So, as a new pattern is introduced in each moment, there's usually a virgin neuron that's happy to match and claim that pattern for its own. But watch the sequence of events for each neuron that does this as time moves on. Each one degrades quickly, and in step one, N21 is the first neuron to match anything, namely the solid black pattern. Yet one step later, when the input has a new pattern, N21 is already starting to decay. By step 8, with no further reinforcement yet, N21 has decayed so much that there's a good chance if the next step brings the solid black pattern back, it may not be the best match for it anymore. However, reinforcement does build confidence. The right bar pattern has been seen 3 times in the above sequence. N5 was the first to see it, and thanks to reinforcement, it has a higher degree of confidence. And so its expectation pattern is more likely to persist longer without reinforcement. Still, this is not at all high. Let's see what happens as time progresses and the patterns are seen more. Note the steps taken number in each snapshot and how each learned neuron's confidence level grows with reinforcement. Okay, then we have a sequence of figures with steps taken equals 20, steps taken equals 40, 60, 80. Now, once we reach steps equals 80, and again, we've all through each step, a random image is selected in each moment from the 6 and presented, and the neurons do their thing. The neuron bank does its pondering for that one moment. The end result at steps taken equals 80. N5 has very solidly learned the right bar pattern. It's got a high level of confidence. N7 has learned the top bar with a high level of confidence. N16 has a high level of confidence for the bottom bar. N17 has learned the left bar. N21 has learned the solid black pattern. Surprisingly, N13, which learned the solid white pattern, is kind of sketchy and has a modest level of confidence. It's not high. It's about it's 0 on that scale from -1 to +1. Okay, so after 80 steps, we have most of the patterns pretty well learned, save for the solid white pattern. By random chance, that one was simply not seen many times during this run. Still, this is markedly worse than when we spoon-fed the patterns to learn one at a time. With 8 steps per pattern and 6 patterns, the learning process took only 48 steps. So maybe that's an indication that this is not a very good learning algorithm. Isn't the real world like this? And when we try this experiment with all 25 patterns thrown around at random, it may take thousands of steps to solidly learn them all instead of the 200 if we were spoon-fed them. But maybe this is exactly what we expect. Have you ever been in a room with someone speaking a language you don't understand? You may be exposed to hundreds of new words. If I asked you to repeat even 3 of them that you picked up and did not already know, you might just shrug and tell me none of them really stuck. But if you asked one of the speakers to teach you 1 or 2 words, you might be able to retain them for the duration of the conversation and reliably repeat them. To use another analogy, consider a grade school English class. Would a teacher be more likely to expose the students to all of the vocabulary words at once and simply repeat them every day? Or instead to expose students to a small number of vocabulary words each week? Clearly, learning a few new words a week is easier than learning the same several hundred all at once, starting from day one. My interpretation of what's going on is that this neural network is behaving very much like our own brains do in this sense. The more focused its attention is on learning a small number of patterns at a time, the faster it will learn them. This may seem like a weakness of our brains, but I don't think so. I believe this is one way our brains filter out extraneous information. We're exposed to an endless stream of changing data. Some of it we already know and expect, but a lot of it is novel. Repetition, especially when it occurs in close succession, is a powerful way to suggest that a novel pattern is not random and therefore potentially interesting enough to learn. In fact, the very principle of rote learning seems to be based on this idea of hijacking this repetition-based learning system in our brains. Learning while performing. As mentioned in the introduction, I've long been bothered by the fact that most AI learning systems require a learning stage separate from a performance process. So far, we've been focused on learning with this novel sort of neural network I've made, and we'll continue to focus on that. But I want to stress that All the while that we are training this neural net, we're also watching it perform. Its only task in this experiment is to match patterns it sees. One simple way to prove this point is to train the neuron bank on however many patterns you wish, and then just check the keep going box and watch it perform. Then, at some point, try adding one more pattern using the use first number while it continues crunching away. It will eventually learn the new pattern, all the while still performing its main task of matching patterns. There is no cue we send to the neuron bank that we are introducing a new pattern. In fact, the neuron bank doesn't know any of these numbers that we see on the screen. It doesn't, for example, know that we have 25 total patterns, or that we are only using 6 of them at the moment. We don't check any box saying, "You are now supposed to be learning." It just does both constantly, both learning and performing. Noisy data. As I said earlier that having a machine learn 6 digital image patterns is just a cheap programming parlor trick. But I said there is more to this. Numenta's Pictures demo app of their HTM concept is configured such that a single node adds a quantization point for each bit-level unique pattern it comes across. True, the HTM can be configured to be a little more relaxed and to consider 2 similar patterns to represent one and the same, but you have to program the threshold of similarity in advance of learning. So really, one is very likely to end up with a very large set of quantization points if the training data is noisy. And their own white paper states, quote, "The system achieved 66% recognition accuracy on the test image set," end quote. Hardly impressive. Traditional ANNs seem to be a little less sensitive to noise, but they aren't perfect either. The matching algorithm for this neural network is incredibly simple. Just add together the differences between the expected and actual input values and multiply them by other basic factors like confidence level. But, as you'll see in the following experiments, this makes it very competent at dealing with noise. Let's start by setting the noise to 50% and brainwashing. We'll take the top bar pattern, number 3, as our starting point and click linger a few times. Watch what happens in the following sequence. And there are simply same as before. We have an image at a snapshot taken at steps taken equals 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And in each of these, we see the input pattern is a noisy variation of the top bar pattern. That is, 2 rows of solid black followed below by 3 rows of solid white. Well, in this case, they're not. They're dirty. That is to say, each pixel of the 25 pixels is tweaked a little bit in the grayscale. And you can see right away from the first step, neuron N21 considers itself the best match, and very quickly it gains in confidence, so that by step 8, fairly high confidence that we've learned this top bar pattern. And what's more interestingly, the pattern is kind of an averaging out of all of the different noisy patterns. So the averaged out version that's learned is actually a little cleaner. Okay. Notice now N21's expectations in step 1 look exactly like the first noisy version of the top bar that it sees. Yet in each successive step of learning, as it gets new noisy versions, expectation shifts more towards the perfectly noise-free top bar pattern it never actually sees. It's learning a mostly noise-free version of the pattern it never sees without that noise. Is this magic? Not at all. The noise is purely random, not structured. That means with each successive step, N21 is averaging out the pixel values and thus canceling the noise. Now, N21 is also becoming more confident, though more slowly than it did when we saw the noise-free version. So with each passing moment, the pattern is changing more and more slowly. Eventually, it will become fairly solid. Let's continue this experiment by training the bank with the first 6 patterns. And now we're looking at a figure that shows steps taken equals 90. And you can see each of the patterns has been learned. N5 has learned the left bar pattern. N6 has learned the lower bar, the bottom bar pattern. N14, the solid black pattern. N17, the solid white pattern. N21, the top bar pattern. N26, the right bar pattern. With manual spoon-fed learning of each of the six patterns, we get to step 90, and all six are pretty solidly learned. Now we can switch on the Keep Going checkbox to let it cycle at random through all six patterns indefinitely, and it will continue to work just fine with 100% accuracy. To be sure, I spot-checked. I didn't check the match accuracy at all steps. In spite of the noise, and all the neurons hungrily looking for new patterns to learn, here it is after 150 unattended steps, still solid in its knowledge. And the next figure shows just that. Looks basically the same, but we're at step 150. Now, we turn the noise level up to 75%. Watch how well it continues to work. And the following figures, step 151, 152, 153, all the way through step 159. And in each case, you see input patterns chosen at random. First, the left bar. It's barely recognizable to my own human eye as the left bar. The right bar, again, barely recognizable. Lower bar. Each of these has 75% noise applied function applied to it to make it very dirty. The solid black pattern. The solid white pattern. Now, this is interesting. At step 155, if you look carefully, you'll see that instead of N17, which is learn the solid white pattern, well, actually, I'm sorry, it's not solid white, it's got to be the left bar, I think. Instead of it being N5, which is learn the left bar, neuron 8, which has not previously learned any pattern yet, has almost no confidence, has matched this unusual pattern. This is a very interesting one. Okay, we continue on. The solid black pattern matches just fine. The solid black pattern, again, matches just fine. The lower, the bottom bar, again, these are all 75% noisy. The right bar, all these match fine. And that's step 159. Look back carefully at these eight steps because they are very telling. Remember, the neuron bank has no idea that I am still using the same six patterns I trained it on. Remember also that with a highly confident neuron, there is a high penalty for each poorly matched dendrite. Looking at the input patterns, I'm struck by how badly degraded they are, and thus difficult for me to match. Yet the neuron bank seems to perform brilliantly. Only at step 155 do we finally see a pattern so badly degraded that the bank decides it's a novel one it might want to learn. Of course, it's never going to be seen again, so this blip will be quickly forgotten and N8 will be free to try learning some other new pattern. In all seven of the other steps, it matches the noisy input pattern correctly. This isn't the end of the story, though. Noise filtering cuts both ways. Some unique patterns will be treated as simply noisy versions of known patterns. Take another look at the source patterns. Again, we see the figure of the 5x5 array of 5x5 grids, images, that is, you know, 5x5 pixel images, source patterns.bmp. Near the bottom, there are four arrow patterns. To your eye, they probably look distinctly different from the sidebar patterns, left, right, top, bottom, that we've been working with. But to this neural net, they are so similar that they are considered to be simply noisy versions of the bars. Or, conversely, the bars are seen as noisy versions of the arrows. Here's our neuron bank after brainwashing and learning the first 19 patterns just before we get to the arrows. You can see the first patterns, solid, white, and black, to be learned are starting to degrade. The figure below shows the first 19 patterns very clearly learned. Now, to introduce one of the arrows to the bank. See how, in just a few steps, this confidence neuron's expectations change to start looking like the arrow? N6 was the one that had matched the bottom bar pattern. Now it's matching this guess you could say, bottom arrow pattern. The bottom arrow actually looks like a pyramid. That is to say, the bottom row is all black. The row above that is three black pixels and, you know, one white pixel on either side. And the very middle row that's above those two is just one solid black pixel surrounded by all white. And then the rows above that are all white. So it's very like the bottom bar pattern with just three pixels different. But in 6 now, still high confidence at having learned the bottom bar pattern, has already started to shift to look a little bit more like the this little pyramid-ish, the bottom arrow pattern. So we're looking at step 153. Then step 155, you can see it shifted even more. Step 157, it's shifted even more, looks more and more like this little pyramid. 159, it's very strongly looking like the pyramid, but still somewhere in between the bottom bar and the bottom arrow. Longevity of information. Now that I've illustrated some of what this particular program can do and thus some of the potential capabilities for machine learning using this concept, I think I can more easily speak about some of its weaknesses and suggest some potential ways to overcome them. For one thing, longevity is lacking. What is learned in this particular demonstration by one neuron can be unlearned within a few minutes of running without seeing that pattern again. That's obviously not a desirable capacity of a machine that may have a useful life of many years. But that doesn't mean that this is a limitation of this type of system per se. I set out to demonstrate not only how a neural network can learn while being productive, but also how unused neurons can be freed up to learn new things without any central control over resource allocation. I did address this to some degree in the current algorithm, actually. As I described earlier, a neuron loses confidence over time if it is unused, and therefore becomes more pliable to adjusting its expectations. However, the degree to which it loses confidence at any given step is determined in part by the best match value seen. That is, if some neuron has a very strong match of the current input pattern, then a non-matching neuron will not lose much confidence. If, however, none of the other neurons considers itself to be a strong match, that could potentially mean there's a new pattern to learn, and so the non-matching neurons will lose confidence a little faster. One way that this algorithm could be improved is by consideration of how full a neuron bank is of knowledge. Perhaps when a bank has a lot of naive neurons, those that are highly confident of what they know should be less likely to lose confidence. Conversely, when there are few or no neurons that remain naive, there could be a higher pressure to lose confidence. Perhaps this could be further adjusted based on the rate of novelty in the input patterns, but that's harder to measure. Perhaps there are higher level ways that memory could be evaluated for importance and, over time, exercised in order to keep it clean and strong. Working memory. When I started making this program, I was not really considering the problem identified earlier in this blog entry of working memory versus long-term memory. But in the course of building and testing Pattern Sniffer, it dawned on me that my neural network was displaying both short-term and long-term learning within the same system. The key difference was not structure, locality, or anything so complicated, but simply repetition. Yes, in the same program we are learning and matching simple visual patterns. But this same kind of memory could just as easily be used to learn a phone number sequence long enough to dial it, or to remember a visual pattern long enough to match it to something else in the room. And without heavy repetition, the neurons that remember it will decay again to naivete, ready to learn some other pattern. Pattern invariance. I think this sample program well demonstrates this kind of neural network's insensitivity to noise data. Still, one thing it clearly is not insensitive to is patterns of information that are subtly transformed. With this program, I decided I would use a small patch for demonstration purposes, in part because I thought it would be worth perhaps replicating the ability of our own retinas to detect and report strong edges and edge-like features at different angles, especially if it could learn about edges all on its own. But I must admit, this was also a cheat of the same sort many AI researchers tackling vision do: forcibly constrain the source data to take advantage of easy-to-code techniques. To their credit, the Numenta team have come up with a crafty way of discerning that different patterns of input are representative of the same things by starting with the assumption that spatial patterns that appear in close time succession to one another very likely have the same cause, and thus such closely tied spatial patterns should be treated as effectively the same when reporting to higher levels of the brain. I think the kind of neural network I've engendered in Pattern Sniffer can benefit from this concept as well. Implicitly, it already embraces the notion that the same pattern, repeated in close succession, has the same cause, and is thus significant enough to learn. But to be able to see that two rather different spatial patterns have a common cause could be very powerful. One way to do this would be to have a neuron bank above the first, which is responsible for discovering two-step or longer sequences in the lower levels data. If, for example, the first level has 10 neurons, the second level could take 20 inputs, 10 for one moment of output, and 10 more for the following moment. In keeping with Jeff Hawking's vision, Hawkins' vision of information flowing both up and down a neural hierarchy, discovering such temporal patterns, the upper neuron bank could reward the contributing lower-level neurons by pushing up their confidence levels even faster. This higher-level neuron bank could even be designed to respond either to the sequence being seen or any one of its constituents being seen, thus serve as an, if I see A, B, or C, I'll treat them as the same kind, as the same kind of operation. One thing I had originally envisioned but never implemented is the concept of don't care. If you look at the source code, you'll notice each dendrite has not only an expectation, but also a care property. The idea was that care would be a value from 0 to 1. Multiplying the match strength by the care value would effectively mean that the less a dendrite cares about the input value, the less likely it would be to contribute positively or negatively to the neuron's overall match strength. I was impressed enough with the results of the algorithm without this that I never bothered exploring it further. Honestly, I don't know quite how I would use it. I had assumed that a neuron could strongly learn some patterns' essential parts and learn to ignore non-essentials by observing that certain parts of a recurring pattern themselves don't recur. But that simply led me to wonder how a neuron bank would decide whether to allocate two or more neurons for pattern variants or to allocate a single neuron with those variants ignored. There's still room to explore this concept further, as it seems almost intuitively like something our own brains would do. More to explore. This is obviously not the end of this concept for me. I think one logical next area of exploration will be hierarchy. I also want to see if and what even the current arrangement can learn when it's exposed to real-world data. Even with noise added, the truth is I'm just feeding this thing carefully crafted strong patterns that seem of dubious relation to the messy sensory world we inhabit. I certainly welcome others to dabble in this concept as well. You can play with this sample program yourself. The config file gives you control over a bunch of factors. You can supply your own source patterns graphic, and the program's user interface is fairly easy to extend for other experiments. The neuron bank class and all of its lower level parts is very self-contained and independent of the UI, which means it can be easily applied in other ways without the need for this or even any user interface. And the core code is surprisingly lightweight, only 3 classes, and heavily commented, so it should be easy to study and even reproduce in other environments. So we'll see what's next. The nuts and bolts of the algorithm. I've tried to describe the concepts of the Pattern Sniffer demonstration program in plain English and with visuals, but it's worthwhile for people more interested in the details of how this algorithm actually works. I'll ignore the UI and test program and focus exclusively on the neuron bank and its constituent parts. Following is a list of the classes and their essential public members. The three classes are neuron bank, neuron, and dendrite. For neuron bank, the public members are inputs as list of single, neurons as list of neuron, new, input count, neuron count, brainwash, ponder. For neuron, the public members are bank as neuron bank, dendrites as list of dendrite, match strength as single, confidence as single, new, bank, comma, list index, comma, dendrite count, brainwash, ponder step 1, ponder step 2. For the dendrite class, there's for neuron as neuron, input index as integer, expectation as single, match strength as single, new for neuron, comma, input index, and brainwash. Next is the algorithm for behavior. Aside from basic maintenance, like the brainwash methods, there really is only one single operation that the neuron bank and all its parts perform. Each moment, the input values are set, and the neuron bank ponders the inputs. Here's a pseudocode summary of how it works. All the methods and properties have been mashed into one chunk to make it easier to read the process in a linear fashion. Here's the short version. Loop endlessly. Indent. Set values in bank.inputs. Each value is a single floating point number from negative 1 to positive 1. Call bank.ponder, and that's sub bank.ponder. For each n and m, me.neurons, n.ponder step 1. Measure the strength of my own match to the current input, followed by for each n in me.neurons, n.ponder step 2. Adjust my confidence level and dendrite expectations. N sub. And then following bank.ponder is for each n in bank.neurons, do something with n.match value, that is, the output. And now the more detailed version, fleshing out ponder step 1 and ponder step 2. Now, inside this, again, bank.ponder is ponder step 1, you know, looping through each of the neurons, ponder step 1, followed by looping through each of the neurons, ponder step 2. Well, ponder step 1 is basically measure the strength of my own match to the current input. And what that means here is there's a loop here that is add up all the dendrite strengths for each D and me.dendrites. Strength equals strength plus D.match strength. And D.match strength is very simply take the input, which equals for neuron.bank.inputs, me.input index. Strength equals 1 minus absolute value, input minus my own expectation. Again, this is for a dendrite. Strength equals strength divided by 6. If strength is less than 0, then strength equals strength times 4 neuron.confidence times 6. Return strength. And that's the end of dendrite.match strength. After that loop going through each of the dendrites, there's a simple step. Divide the total to get the average dendrite strength. And here it's strength equals strength divided by dendrite count. In this case, 25 dendrites. Maybe, and then following that is a simple conditional. Maybe I am the new best match. If strength is greater than bank.bestmatch, then bank.bestmatch equals strength. Bank.bestmatch index equals me.list index. Finally, me.match strength equals strength. That's just packing it away. Now, n.ponder step 2 is a bit more complicated, but not by much. It's still just a page of code, of pseudocode here. And it begins with a big conditional that breaks this up into two subchunks of code. If me.listindex equals bank.bestmatchindex, that is to say, if I am the best matching index, then execute the following chunk of code. Boost my confidence a little. Me.confidence equals me.confidence plus 0.8 times me.matchStrength. If me.confidence is greater than 0.9, then me.confidence equals 0.9. That basically is clamping the value to no greater than 0.9. And then loops through each of the dendrites, and for each dendrite it says the delta value equals the input minus the the dendrite's expectation. And then little note here that says, the more confident I am, the less I want to deviate from my current expectation. So then we alter delta by saying delta equals delta times 1 minus me dot confidence. D dot expectation equals D dot expectation plus delta. That's tweaking it. And that's the loop. And that's all the code that's run if I am the best matching neuron in this moment. Now, then there's the else case. If I'm not, I don't have the best match. I am some other neuron other than the best matching one. The note begins, I should lose confidence more when no other neuron has a strong match. Me.confidence equals me.confidence times 0.001 times 1 minus banked up best match. If me.confidence is less than 0.05, then me.confidence equals 0.05, the minimum possible confidence. We try to clamp the values not at 0 to 1, but just a little above 0 and a little below 1. For I equals 0 to me.dendrites.count, that is to say we loop through all the dendrites. For each one we say if bank.best match value minus me.match strength is less than 0.1, that is to say if I'm really close to having the best match but I'm not the best match, then the goal is to get a little more random. So for each of the dendrites we're going to say d.expectation equals plus or minus 0.05 times 1 minus me.confidence. If I'm not a really close match, if I'm not close to being the best match, we go through each of the dendrites, and again we're saying, okay, take the delta. The delta is the input value for that dendrite minus its expectation. Again, a value from negative 1 to positive 1. The more confident I am, the less I want to deviate from my current expectations. So we tweak delta. We say delta equals delta times 1 minus confidence. And finally, we say d dot expectation equals d dot expectation equals d dot expectation plus random plus or minus 0.00001 times delta times 0.2. And that's it. I can't imagine that anyone could sit and listen to my description of the algorithm and really cognize that, so I apologize for even bothering, but there it is. It might be a little entertaining to try to boil this down to a few lengthy mathematical formulas, but I usually find those more intimidating than helpful. And that's the end of the blog.